Welcome everyone to the Film Vault. That is Andrew John Brunswick, your host for today. Reviews of Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, Men, and a few other goodies for you. We're doing this a little bit differently, a remote episode. Anderson is under the weather and has very graciously and thoughtfully, I will point out, said, you know what, I'm concerned about your health and I will not risk infecting you with any of my diseases, though they may be.
Not sound like me at all. I said that. I must be very sick.
You must be very sick. You have no recollection of
that. That is bizarre that I would say something that kind and thoughtful.
So magnanimous.
I don't get it. Yeah. I woke up. I was doing some yard work last night, and I'm right next to this horrific fly trap that I have. One of those ones where you put liquid in that horrific smelling powder, you know, and then you come back a few days later, and it just looks like World War Z, but flies.
Oh, I'm not familiar with these. What is this?
It's
thing?
Awful. It's really awful. It's one of the grossest things I've ever seen. It's one of the saddest things I've ever seen. Even though, you know, they're just flies, but they're all like, it's a giant fly soup. They're all like literally crawling on each other. There's probably 1,000 flies in this tiny little quart. It's barely maybe a quart. It's like a jar, like a pickle jar size thing. And then they're just attracted, and they got one way in. And they can't figure out how to get out because they have fly brains. And I was working by that thing. I was doing some hard labor, you know, trying to pull out some like a bunch of stuff that was here when we moved in, and I'm trying to get it out because it's invasive and it's weeds, and I started feeling like nauseous and weird, and now I woke up this morning with a bad sore throat and nausea. Oof. And
gotta be
cough.
Careful, buddy. What was the drummer for the band Toto? He died. Supposedly, the allegation is that he died when like Roundup weed killer like sprayed back at him, and he ingested it and was dead. They may have found a little bit of cocaine in his system.
Yeah, but, I feel like if you're dying from some Roundup and you're not a weed yourself, then you got some other issues probably, or maybe you're just not long for the earth.
That's true. Maybe you're on your way out anyway. He also was shot.
Oh, yeah. He also took the bullet.
He also
straight to the heart.
Got shot that same day, which because it could be a coincidence.
I was sick just like four weeks ago or so when everyone was sick. And it's annoying. Also, I don't like to whine and bitch, especially when I got you as my co-host here. I feel like
that's a really good point.
Like a big pap saying, I have a cold, but I got a fever. I'm sweating. And I thought it'd be smart just do it in my garage over here.
Save this bullshit for the after disaster.
Plus, I didn't want Jordan. I didn't want to get Jordan Montgomery sick. He was going to be the interim producer today, driving in from Irvine. Yeah, and I would have felt really bad. I mean, getting you sick is one thing, but if I got poor Jordan sick, you know what I mean?
Oh, sweet, sweet Jordan.
So, hey, let's get to it. I already have a problem with something that you did. You led with Chip and Dale, and that just optics. It doesn't look good for our show. We got some street cred. You shouldn't be leading with Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers.
Chip and Dale's a fun movie.
Yes, but on the surface, I would imagine the number of people listening to this don't even realize like the connection and why we might like it, and you know, the Lonely Island connection that is. So just starting off with Chip and Dale seems a little sad.
We'll fix that in post. We'll fix that in post.
When you say we, you mean me.
Yeah, the royal we.
And I won't.
Everyone but me.
And I won't. All right, some business. It was a tough week, Brian. And I think you know that because you delightfully were forwarding me social media interactions that you were having, that the listeners were having amongst themselves in regards to me and my stupidity. Yes, I made a massive faux pas last week in talking about Fried Green Tomatoes. I'll leave it at that. You suggested that, is that the movie that involves this? And I said, oh, no, how could you, Brian? Of course not.
Don't be foolish.
In fairness to me, it's been probably 25 years since I've seen that delightful movie, and that's not what I remember that movie for, and you were absolutely right. Have you seen Fried Green Tomatoes?
I saw it probably the same 25 years ago that you did. Mm-hmm. I will point out that you and I probably as much as, if not more, no, definitely not true, but I often say stupid things, get things wrong, just basic facts, don't even, movies that I've not heard of that enrage you, yet it wasn't so much the forgetting or the whatever, it was the swiftness with which you dismissed my accurate recollection.
Yes. Mm. And we're being careful just in case no one has any idea what we're talking about and you still haven't seen Fried Green Tomatoes, which we highly recommend you do. Very good movie.
It's a fun movie. As
from
I
what we remember. From what I remember, yeah. I can to defend myself 25 years. Also, my number one did have that element. And in fact, it was all leading up to what you were suggesting was in Fried Green Tomatoes. So I was irked that you were burning what I thought you were confusing the two movies and you were burning my number one. So that was also factored into my reaction. Also, just you being you will factor into my rage.
I can't help that. I'm almost always me.
But what I'd like to do, Brian, and tell me if you're with me here, is I would like to move past it and just like focus on all the things that I've said that have been right over the years. Like that.
Oh,
remember,
that's
a good
idea.
I was talking about Goodfellas just a few weeks ago and how Martin Scorsese directed it, and I believe that's correct.
The chalk went up for old Andy over there.
Yeah, we should just like really focus on that. I think, you know what I mean.
Do you ever watch like? You've probably seen it once or twice. There's a show called Around the Horn on ESPN.
No, it's not called that, you idiot. Of course it's not called that. Oh, I'm sorry.
Around the Horn? Oh, nice, I see. Yeah, they give people points every time they like make like a good point or like state a correct fact. And we should do that. Like, I still have a little counter every time you say, Goodfellas from 1991. Ding, like you get a little point.
You know what? One of the strangest things about Goodfellas is that Vincent Gallo is credited as being in that film, and I've seen Goodfellas 20 times. Vincent Gallo is not in Goodfellas. It's bizarre that he's got the credit.
Is it likely that he was cast in the film and given a role that was cut out, but contractually they still had to credit him?
I would imagine, but I've even dug and looked for anything, and there's just nothing. There's nothing.
Interesting.
I also talk about Steven Spielberg directing Jaws, and I want you to remember that. And then I also talked about Johnny Depp being in Pirates of the Caribbean. So can we just
also
all
correct.
Focus on that? All focus on those things. That'd be cool for me anyways. Just help me out here. It was a tough week.
I will say that someone on the same Reddit thread also pointed out that he feels bad saying it, but I was right about the sushi rice.
About sushi rice makes the sushi. I just can't
Apparently
believe that.
Apparently, that separates the men from the boys.
I mean, it definitely factors in because you know there's only two things involved in your Negri sushi over there, Brian. It's the rice and the raw fish. I don't know why that's so funny.
I take no joy in that one though, because not even my like fact or insight. It's just something that someone told me that I've retained.
It's akin to saying that a grilled cheese all comes down to the bread and has nothing to do with the cheese. And there's just very little truth to that. You see
actually,
what I'm saying?
Actually, that makes sense.
Oh, my God. Hey, let's get into movies that were seen by you and I since the last... Oh, I almost forgot about the other big...
Oh, yes, please.
It's been a tough week for old Andy over here, right? Tyler Mayer, he had assigned us a movie, as I announced on the program last week. We're all going to sit down and watch 2009's Ink, I-N-K, Ink. And I did something that has not yet happened, and now it's happened, and hopefully it doesn't ever happen again. And I have learned my lesson. But I sat down, I talked into my TV, because I live in the year 2022, Brian, and it's a future that we can all get on board with, where you tell your TV what you want to watch, and your TV presents you with options. So I said, Ink. And a number of things, a bunch of like Ink tattoo artist shows popped up, and few different Ink movies popped up, but I went down, scrolled down to the 2009 Ink, because that's what Tyler Mayer wanted us to watch, and came up with my options, and one of those options was Prime Video, and I was delighted, so I said, let's do this, and I clicked on it, and I began watching this French film called Ink, and I gotta tell you, it was very interesting. It was unlike any movie I'd ever seen before, because I will flick fest this movie eventually. This Ink.
You should do it in the same episode.
The characters were coming fast and furious, and they were doing no like leading the viewer to water, leading a horse to water. They were not helping you out. It was a bit confusing. There was a lot of stuff going on. You were trying to figure it out.
It was a bit impenetrable.
I penetrated, but it all revolved around this drug that you put in your eyes called Ink, and it was kind of a tropey story, as you know, like there's a crime boss and. There's this tough guy who's just a truck driver, but he gets pulled back in, and all these different storylines.
Did you watch Dread?
No, It is similar to that, though. It's also similar a little bit to Raid Redemption. So I'm an hour into this movie, and I got to tell you, I'm fairly compelled. However, it was doing this weird thing where it was almost like I was watching like a Chinese censored version, because like every now and again, this red screen would pop up, which I had never seen on Amazon Prime, and like an exclamation mark was in there and a couple little boxes. It was bizarre. It was jarring. And I thought that they were censoring something for, I was very excited. I'm like, oh, are they censoring something for the American version? But I think it was just a deliverable issue. I think it was a problem with the file. And I'd never seen anything like it. It probably happened a dozen times throughout this 2018 Ink movie, Ink, I-N-K, which I give a thumbs up to. It's interesting. Anyways, I'm about an hour in, and I knew that the Tyler Mayer assigned movie at the assigner level was Ink, involving, it was a creature feature of sorts. And I'm like, this is a long way to get to creatures. Like, when are the creatures showing up? So I paused it. And when I paused it, I saw the 2018, and I'm like, oh my God, I've been watching the wrong movie for an hour.
Nice.
And it was, hey, it's on, you know, there's a lot of movies, a lot of titles, a lot of streaming services, but I did everything correct in this. I believe that it was the 2009 movie, because that's what I clicked on. That's the options they gave me. I went reverse engineered it, happened again. So that's in their little algorithms are a little bit messed up there. So a nerd put in the wrong thing and didn't do his due diligence to make sure that it was the right file.
Brutal.
That's on him or her, I would imagine.
No, that's
him
interesting, because I saw Ink, INC, a documentary about incorporating businesses. Very informative, not very cinematic.
This is the movie you watched.
That's right. And I feel like we both should forget our experiences and see Tyler Mayer's movie.
Yes, that's right. So next week we'll be watching Tyler Mayer's chosen film, which is Ink. And then we got Alex Simpson coming up right after that. And I got a list. I got them all categorized and ordered too, so that we can get through all of these in a fair fashion, because people are owed movies, Brian.
I will actually correct my own stupid joke and say that, yes, I watched the correct Ink, and I will not say anything about it except a sort of an outside perspective observation. Amazon, I rented it on Amazon for like, I don't know, $3 or $4. And Amazon, they're a movie studio, Anderson. Like, they are ostensibly making movies and putting them into the world. They should have some knowledge of movies. The description calls Ink, quote, high concept. And I think they fall into the very large gap of people who think high concept means like, a very heady movie, when in fact it means the opposite. We did a whole episode on high concept movies.
We did.
It is... I will tell you, it is one of the lowest concept movies I've ever seen. It is a heady, dense movie that doesn't rely on plot.
Is it more high concept than Men?
No, Men is definitely more high concept. Well, it's close, but I would still lean towards Men.
Talking about the third act. Let's talk about the third act. In fairness to Prime and Amazon, not that I need to stick up for them, but that's probably on the filmmaker themselves or the distributor,
because
responsible for all that. Yeah, they don't leave that up to Prime. Prime will make sure that you're not saying, you know, like, this is a wholesome children's movie when you got some kind of Skinamax porn going on, but or they wait for a complaint. But no, they're not filling those boxes out. That's up to the people that upload them.
That's interesting. I actually hadn't even considered that. So if that's the case,
it's because you're stupid.
That's probably why it is. Let's focus on the things I get right.
I called my daughter Tessa this morning, and that was correct.
Repeatedly. Almost exclusively.
Let's do this. Let's do movies. You know what sucks is, like, I quit smoking a number of months ago, and like, I mean, I feel better in the morning for sure. But overall, like, I don't feel virile. I don't feel like I'm like a strong like boy. I don't feel like I'm. I mean, I do. I've always feel like that. But I mean, I don't feel like I can take on the world just because, like, I've been sick more often than not. I feel like the SIGs kept the illnesses at bay. What's going
on? Interesting. I feel like I can identify with you on this, because it's what you're describing sounds similar when I finished my last round of chemo, and it was like, all right, ready to feel good, here we go. And it's like, no, I feel the same.
I feel like me quitting smoking should be parallel to your quitting chemo.
There you go.
Kyle, hey, congrats on quitting chemo there, by the way. That's it's not easy to do.
It's a tough mistress.
I just took a sip of coffee, and then I cackled very high-pitchedly. Hey, let's get into talking some moves. Oh, quick little shout-out to everyone who will be joining us in two short nights, assuming I don't get much worse, but I don't think I will. We will be sitting together live watching The Green Inferno together. I am dreading this movie. It is a gore fest, a slasher porn like no other. Apparently animals don't fare well in this movie, which is going to be tough for me. But that's what the listenership has deemed we will be watching for our first ever Film Vault Live movie night, which is exciting. I've been doing some tests, Brian. I did a Twitch test the other day and went live. And next thing you know, there's 15 of our faithful on there going, "Hey, Anderson."
Nice. And,
you know, I had a mixed minus issue. So like a lot of things were repeating and then like, multiple versions of me. That's an inside joke there, Brian, that I'm not going to.
I don't know that it's that.
It's fairly inside.
I don't know. Inside it is.
Drew had nothing to do with this. So also, I've been doing all sorts of different tests and whatnot. What I've come up with is we will be doing it via our YouTube channel. But if you are one of the $10 watch live with us group, God, I'm not saying this properly, but you know what I mean? The newest Patreon tier, which is one at least once a month, we're going to get together for a live video feed with just you guys, be answering questions in the forums there on the message boards. And we're going to be watching movies. And every single month, we're going to do something different. And we might do even like, you know, impromptu stuff. Eventually, we're going to start doing the Flick Fashions this way as well. You will be getting a link to this thing Wednesday night, 6:30 by 6:30 PST. Unless there's issue, you'll get an update by 6:30 if we're having some technical snafus. But we should be watching the movie just after 7. We'll be starting The Green Inferno. Drinks will be had. We're going to watch the movie all together. We're all going to queue it up. It's a Netflix movie, so we'll all be able to suffer through it together. It's going to be a good time. Going to be a good time.
Looking forward to it.
I'm excited. We've been threatening to do this for literally years. Kind of missed the best opportunity would have been to do it during COVID, but you and I weren't getting together in the same room during that anyway, so it would have been a little tough. But yeah, I'm excited to finally be doing this. This is something I've wanted to do for a long, long time.
Nice, so me too. That would be a fun time, and I would like to hear what the listeners have seen, if you have that handy.
Oh yeah, FanFlixion. Apparently there's an ad going on. I mean, an ad. There's some kind of holiday going on in Canada. So that means that Mitch Burns and Jordan Wolf are both a little bit behind. I had to shoot them a little email saying, hey, don't forget about us over here.
Stop celebrating.
I don't know what the holiday is. What's today as we record this?
It's May 20th. Monday, May 23rd. Right? Well, let me look up Canadian holiday.
Okay.
You go ahead and I'll look that up.
Justin. All right, here we go. A little fan fiction brought to us week in, week out by the one and only Mitch Burns. Mitch Burns is also following my wife's Facebook marketplace, which is very nice. Very enjoyable to see familiar names following along. Makes her very, very happy. And here we go. Here is a sampling of what some of the listeners have watched since the last time we talked to you. Justin McCafferty on Facebook. Listen, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers is the best movie I've seen in a while. It's very Lord Miller and so much better than it needed to be. It's member berries, but done well. Very self-aware and multi-metaverse. Yes, it is. Excuse me. With 17 reviews, Chip and Dale has 100% on the Film Vault Tomato. So I take back everything I said, griping at you for leading with Chip and Dale.
Tough week for you.
This guy, Jones C. on Instagram, saw Downton Abbey. If you watch the show, this will not disappoint. A very pleasant way to spend a Saturday afternoon with crumpets and tea. And he didn't say that the last part with the crumpets and tea. I added that part in just to paint a picture.
Fair enough.
Matthew Sun on Facebook. OP Gun Maverick. I think it's Top Gun is what he was looking for there. Maybe something got the T, I guess, in Top Gun. Because it just says Op Gun. Top Gun Maverick. I got to see an advanced screening, and it's much better than it needs to be. Great callback to the first movie. Good aerial combat, and a fitting end for the legacy characters. Recommend to see on the big screen. I got my ticket, Brad. I don't know about you, but I got my ticket, and I'm ready to be disappointed.
I got my ticket, and I'll have seen it in time for our next episode recording.
I mean, that's how how it works.
Yeah, but it's a holiday weekend. I'll be out of town. I snagged a Thursday evening ticket.
For what? Where are you going now, Mr. Jet Setter? Why do you got to leave so much?
Don't worry about it. It's someplace you haven't heard of. This is Victoria Day in Canada, a holiday originally meant to mark the birthday of Queen Victoria. It is now similar to Memorial Day in the U.S., the unofficial launch of Canada's summer.
Hmm.
So do summer.
Do all these countries, and I'm not suggesting that America started the trend, you know, or like, same with the Christians, with the various religions. It seems like everyone's got the same thing, but they just call it different things, right?
It's bizarre. Like we need a holiday at the end of May to kick off the summer.
Something for a spring. You guys can call it Easter. We'll call it some of the bizarre rituals that happen around spring to bring in spring are bizarre too. I got a book for Atticus at the local library, if you must know, Brian, and it was fascinating. In Sweden, they dress up like witches. They go door to door, spring, to kick off spring and ask for candy. I'm like, you guys, a little backwards over there.
Which witches get stitches?
It's not another thing. Friday.
Friday. Hey, wait, I gotta tell you something. You know what? I snuck into the Adam Carolla show today.
Why would you sneak in there?
I snuck into it?
Oh, you snuck in verbally. What'd you do?
I snuck something in there. Vatos locos forever.
Vatos locos! How'd you do that?
We're talking to, this is a deep pull. I know your wife likes reality shows. Does she watch Selling Sunset on Netflix?
I think so. It's like the real estate guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe I've walked in with some people with a lot of facial surgery talking about high-end deals made. Yeah.
So our guest was one of the two twins who owns the agency, Jason Oppenheim.
Two twins is redundant.
He was going on
rough
and tumble childhood, ended up in juvie a lot, blah, blah, blah. And he and his brother were miscreants. And I guess our producers found a picture from maybe his Instagram or something. Anyway, they put it up there. And there was a bandana tied around one of their heads. And they looked like toughs, young toughs. And so I snuck in there, a little vatos locos forever.
It's Blood and Blood Out, for those of you who not be initiated. And Blood and Blood Out is a movie that should be seen by all people who enjoy movies.
What about people like me who don't necessarily enjoy movies?
Even people who don't like movies will enjoy Miklo's stylings. And I can't speak to the sequels, many of which there are, because Damian Chapa, who plays Miklo, he's the white guy who's in the barrio, and he's never really quite adopted by the barrio because he's very white, but he's the lead character in this. He's the one who says Vatos Locos forever, probably more than anybody else. And it was his property at some point, or maybe throughout since the beginning. And he kept making sequels without a budget, and he made at least two, as far as I know. But Benjamin Pratt's in there, and Benjamin Bratt, I should say, he's very good as Paco. All right. Enough of Bound by Honor, which is not what we call
Bound
it.
Bound by Honor.
I mean, that was the re-release, or that's how they released it. I don't know. Blood in, Blood Out is the name of the GD movie. Okay, here we go. Let's finish this up. Let's wrap this up, please. May we wrap it up?
Please.
Friday on Reddit. Friday spelled with a PH there. Friday on Reddit. After hearing the flick fashion, I watched Boiling Point. Great movie, and I agree with the guys. It didn't need to be one take, but goddamn. I think he was going for goddamn. Goddamn. Was it awesome because it was?
Damn, he's emphasizing. He's using dialect.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Perhaps you're right, Brian. Goddamn. Was it awesome because it was a winner? Thank you, Friday on Reddit, for backing up our assumption or our assertion that Boiling Point is a fantastic movie. And then finally, at Lewis Longshadow on Twitter, men, the last 20 minutes will be a deal maker or breaker. For me, it didn't work. At Lewis Longshadow, you Philistine. Let's talk more. Let's just launch right into men. Which
men.
I would like to preface we absolutely have to do a spoiler discussion for this movie because of what at Lewis Longshadow is referring to, which is the last 20 minutes. Which, not unlike his Alex Garland's previous movie, Annihilation, the last 20 minutes is make or break, I think, for a lot of will be make or break. Well put, at Lewis Longshadow. The last 20 minutes of Ex Machina, his first movie, I think that was That also is a very, very strong, particular type of ending, but it didn't. It's not in the same pool at all as these last two endings from his last two movies. But anyway, so we're going to have to talk about the ending at length, because that is, for the most part, like at least half the movie, if not 60%, 70% of the movie is, you're going to think of this movie 20 years from now, or you're just going to think about those last 20 minutes. Am I right?
Yeah, you're bleeding into Men. Can I set it up?
Yes, please.
Men is a 2022 film in theaters now, written and directed by, yes, the aforementioned Alex Garland. He, the writer and director of Ex Machina, Annihilation, and did you know, as I did not, Anderson, that he was the shadow director uncredited on his own screenplay for Dread?
I knew that he wrote part of that, if not all of that, as well as 28 Days Later, but I wasn't aware that he was a shadow director. No.
Yeah.
I did
so
not know that.
Much like, I guess, David Leitch on John Wick, it turns out that Alex Garland really was the director of Men. I don't know if this is a secret that's been known for quite some time, but I learned that today. Starring Jesse Buckley, Rory Kinnear, Papa Assidu, and Gail Rankin. This is 76% of Rotten Tomatoes, like I said, in theaters now. There is a, my first note is on the end. I worked my note here to sort of be very vague about it, but there's a gimmick at the end of the movie, and I hesitate to call it a gimmick. It's just a sort of a thing that happens a few times in a row. And I think it was meant to shock people, Anderson, but for me, it was so obvious and so instantly predictable. Like, they keep going with it almost as if to say, like, hey, I bet you never guess what's coming next. I guess we can all guess what's coming next quite easily.
No, I didn't get that sense. We'll save this for the spoiler, because obviously we cannot talk about this in the just the regular review of the movie, the regular flick fashion, Brian, because, I mean, it's given away the entire point of the movie, I guess. And we'll debate and come up with our own interpretations.
I think that's pretty vague about what happened.
No, yeah, you're being vague. You haven't crossed any lines yet. But as far as, like, shocking that it was going to continue, it didn't shock me when it first happens. I mean, we shouldn't even talk about this now, because it's just going to frustrate people who aren't privy to our spoiler only discussions behind the paywall. But I think there's plenty of
people listening who've seen the
movie.
I mean,
there's no way you can be shocked at like 8-9 minutes in when it can. It's like, I want to tell you what it is, but I can't, because it would be giving something away. But
When this thing happens for the first time, I at least had the reaction of, oh my, but didn't see that coming.
Didn't see that coming. Yeah,
and
no
then
one...
it happens a few more times. They're like, all right.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't supposed to be a surprise every time it happened, which you're suggesting.
That's what I felt. Right.
Let's get to the actual movie, the vibe, the tone, all of that, the performances, the message, if you will, Brian. So, let's get to this Alex Garland, his latest effort.
So, dear Jessie Buckley, the female lead of the film, she retreats. She pulls up to a country cabin. Not a cabin. It's actually a very nice house. But she pulls up to a house
like
in the
tutor.
Country.
It's a tutor.
Country house. Country house. Yeah, indeed. And she checks in, and old Rory Kinnear is the kindly old middle-aged. Oh, we're middle-aged. He's the kindly older gentleman showing her around. It's his place. He's like, oh, here's the this and here's the that. And he's an affable.
Everything you see in the trailer, if you've seen the trailer.
He's an affable fellow, and leaves her alone. And turns out we find that she's recovering from a trauma. I'll just leave it at that. And she's there to sort of clear her head. But wouldn't you know it, things aren't quite what they seem. And I don't feel like we can say much more about the plot. I mean,
no, but
like you said, the trailer kind of definitely suggests that there will be, things are not as they seem.
Right. And you got the unreliable narrator going on with Jessica, because she's going through some trauma, and she's trying to work things out, and she's treating herself to this working vacation, because she's still working on her laptop in this house that's way too big for her, but she's out in the country. She lives in London. She's getting away from it all, trying to center herself, because she went through something very traumatic in her own personal life, and she's out here by herself in this tutor that Brian alluded to. And her only friend that she's talking to, she's doing FaceTime check-ins with her friend, who, if you've seen Glow, you might recognize her as Wolf, the Wolf Woman in Glow, the wrestling show, which unceremoniously got canceled. It was a very, very good show.
This is Gail Rankin you're talking about. I don't know her glow.
Gail Rankin, and we see a lot of her on FaceTime. And yeah, what is she playing? Glow. Sheila the She-Wolf. She was Sheila the She-Wolf in Glow. What a good show. Anyway, so the movie is one of these movies that is very its own thing, and it's got a rhythm to it, and it's got a feel to it, and it's a love affair with nature at times. It's definitely got that elevated horror thing going. Almost feels more like Ari Aster than anything that he's done before this. It almost feels Ari Aster influenced, unless I'm crazy here.
No, I see what you're saying. The movie has like a lot of Alex Garland signature elements to it. It's got paranoia. It's got women in danger from threatening men, but also the women kicking ass. The problem I had with it was this severe lack of plot, and I have no doubt that was intentional. That said, that was a real strength of his last two movies, Ex Machina and Annihilation. Both had a really driving plot. You're like, where is this going? Where is this going? I didn't care where men was going.
I totally agree. This felt half-baked. It felt, as to me while watching it, that it was the entire story, if you can call it that, was built around the desire to put forth these images that were very haunting and very well, they looked music video, right? Like mid-90s music video. And maybe they would have been served better just left in a music video and not stitched together to form some kind of a storyline here. Because for me, the overall story didn't work. I have a lot to say about the message, whether, you know, it's this thing or that thing, but it feels a little bit like, you know, when comics call each other out and they do it in social media a lot, like, I can't believe this comic said that, so offensive. And it's like, I hear Bill Burr bitching about it all the time. And it's like, you should not be calling out your own. And I feel like there's a lot of that from Alex Garland, the man, calling out men here. However, I do have some thoughts on that as well. He makes some valid points, but I mean, they're pretty obvious points too. I mean, let's go back to Wonder Woman. Like Wonder Woman, the entire message there is women are better than men. It's like, yeah, no shit. Anyone who had a loving mother and, you know, had any kind of like healthy relationships with women, you'll learn that women are just inherently better than men. Like, they just have not to be, you know, make sweeping generalizations, but I'd much rather be taken care of and had my best interest in the hands of a woman than, you know, some dude, for sure.
Really, really, really playing to our 8% there.
It's true, though. I mean, women are just the better species, even if they can be annoying and
lippy.
Lippy, yeah, you got the lippy over there. And what else are they? Very manipulative. Very, very manipulative.
Constantly menstruating.
Women care more about life, and men seem to be driven by death. I mean, that seems kind of like...
Wow. Right? I didn't get that from this movie, which is frustrating because this movie has some really cool elements to it. Like Alex Garland is so incredibly talented that you can't have a movie. He can't make a movie without at least a few like great moments, you know, like her in the tunnel was great. And even onto the concept of like Rory Kinnear playing multiple roles. If there's no way he sniffs an Oscar, sadly, but it would be justified if he got a Best Supporting Actor nomination.
It would be interesting, but yeah, I don't think it's that kind of movie. I don't think we're going to hear from this movie at all come Oscar season later next year. Jesus, it's so far away still. But yeah, I mean, I'm in pretty much full agreement with you here. Now, the interesting thing about this movie will be the discussions that people have. And, you know, I'm the first to admit that I am not the brightest bulb, and I'm not going to pick up on all the subtext and parables and, you know, the symbolism and whatnot. And it definitely feels like it's one of those movies where even the author himself will not come out and tell you. Actually, I know this is true because I've read interviews since seeing this movie to figure out, you know, exactly what he's trying to say. And he's very cagey. He's like, it's up to the audience, which, you know, great artists do that sometimes. And Kubrick used to do that. You know, it's like whatever you want to interpret it as, that's what it is. I'm not going to tell you what I was setting out to do. However, my thing with that is if you are going to, David Lynch does that all the time, it's a bit of a cop out. And my thing with that is if you're going to do something like that, you should have at least something you can hang your hat on, right? Like a through line, where like this is happening and you get that. And like, you know, even the simplest among us will get something out of the movie. And then you have some other subtext and some hidden messages and some more things, food for thought and fodder, you know, for discussion that will add to it. When it's all the latter, when it's all just like, well, what do you think it means? And you know what I mean? And
yeah, no, it's an excuse to make something half-baked like you alluded to.
Yeah, it just felt like, you know, he was given a budget and he, I think he's kind of got carte blanche with A24. This is a very A24 movie too. And, you know, he had some images that he probably has wanted to work into other movies for a while now. He's probably got them stuck in his head, if I have any idea, you know, what he's going through as a creator. And he wanted to do these things, but he didn't really know how to. I read that he was inspired by, there's a Green Man carving that is gone, that he goes back to with the images multiple times in this movie. And it's some kind of bizarre medieval carving, wood carving of, well, I guess it's called a Green Man. And these things are all over Europe, I guess. And he says he was inspired to make this movie from the Green Man carvings. And there's very little known about these Green Man carvings. But somebody, whether it was religious related, they show up in churches, or it could be pagan. They go back way, way back, centuries old. And they're creepy and they're interesting. And he has like really cool lighting effects where, you know, he's got a light going up, moving on it. And it gives it the shadow, the dread, the sense of dread. And this is, this, that was the inspiration for this movie, were these Green Man carvings. Yeah, and that does not surprise me at all, right? Sense. That totally lines up with this movie. When everything's said and done, we're going to have to spend probably 10 minutes talking about that last 20 minutes. And I'm interested to get your take on that. I can tell you you're not going to get Garland's take because he's not giving it. Because he's like, yeah, it's up to the viewer. Yeah, which I think is a cop-out.
A little bit frustrating, but there's enough good stuff in here. I don't think this is a good movie per se, but there's enough good stuff that you realize Alex Garland hasn't lost his fastball. He just kind of strayed a little bit. It happens. I'm excited to see what he does next, because even even the recurring subplot slash backstory of her and her husband, I found that compelling. Like, I was like, oh, tell me more. This is heart-wrenching, but
it was okay. Yeah,
not enough. Just
You know, the problem with that was we didn't see them when they were happy together, so I was never invested. Right. I did not care about them. We only saw them when things were broken. I do like that actor, though. I recognize him from a TV show, which I watched all of, called I May Destroy You. I May Destroy You, which very interesting, very good show. I didn't really know how to talk about it on the show, so I didn't bring it to the show, but I May Destroy You is a very interesting television program. I believe it's on HBO Max. As far as the overall message of the movie, which we'll talk about more later, it's a bit too now for my taste as well. A little bit, almost exploitative. Like, oh, men are taking, you know, a lot of heat right now. He probably got this greenlit soon after Weinstein. I could be wrong, but you know, it seems to almost be in line with the Me Too movement, which by the time you finish the movie and you get it released, you know, it's still going on, but it just seems a little like, oh, I have something to say bad about men, and should it be a man saying these things? You know what I mean?
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
So I also have an alternate possibility for what he's really trying to say, and it's not too nice to the ladies if you interpret it a certain way. So we'll see.
You know, Alex Garland is quietly kind of elbowing his way into the discussion, like of director, male directors who really write and portray strong female characters. You know, he's not quite up there with Tarantino or James Cameron yet, but if you look at Ex Machina and Annihilation and Dread in this movie, like, he's putting together a nice little resume.
Nice little resume, Brent?
Well, in terms of, you know, portraying strong female characters.
I hear what you're saying. Do you remember the end of Annihilation?
I do. I loved it.
I was shocked that the studio allowed it to go on as long as it did, because it just kept going and going. And I remember I compared it to 2001 and the end of the wormhole in 2001, which just kept going and going and going. And I know that it lost the majority of the audience. And I can tell you, last night, I think he outdid himself, or two nights ago when I saw this movie, the audience that I saw it with, it's a tough relationship that I have with the audience. Because on one hand, I'm so happy that there's people in the theater watching movies, right?
There were a lot of people seeing this when I saw it.
I'm so afraid that theaters are going away, and it's really nice, especially to see like younger people, like, still, you know, putting down some real cash to go see, you know, spend 2 hours in a theater and
kids,
you know,
these days,
go on this trip. However, I become enraged with my my peers at these theaters very often, as was the case a couple nights ago. I had a couple kids. When I say kids, they're probably like mid-20s, on their phones throughout the movie, hearting things, Instagramming, hearting, Instagram, heart. I like that heart. And they couldn't be sly with the fucking phones. Like they don't know how to do that. And there are a lot of slow moments in this movie that weren't keeping these kids interest. So they're like, oh, let's see what's happened on my Instagram feed in the last 10 minutes. And they start hearting, and they couldn't keep it down on their fucking lap, or, you know, make the screen dim. It's just every time this one guy would heart something, it was just a bright fucking white heart in my view. And I could feel my arm, and I'm not kidding, like involuntarily, like grabbing ice, and I was going to chuck it at the dude.
That would be a good move.
The couple that sat down next to me 5 minutes after the movie began, this is what they did after reclining in both their seats in their love seat and then snuggling in. I couldn't hear one word they were saying, but they were saying lots of words, Brian. And I'm not kidding. 90 seconds couldn't go by without and I don't think that they knew each other that well, because it got really uncomfortable and very awkward towards the end of the movie. This is not a first date movie or a second date movie. I would be uncomfortable watching this movie with my own wife, and I've been with her for 20 years. This is not a movie you take a date to. And then the third act also introduced this guy to my theater, who decided that this is when he was going to bring his contraband out, which was the loudest food wrapping cellophane. It was like one of those like triple, quadruple ply plastic cellophane bags. It's like crinkle, 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 crinkle. Oh my God damn, Brian. So the movie had a lot of competition. Sure. In the theater between Harding Instagram fucks and the right next to me. Right fucking dude, I gave the dude a really hard look, right, during one of the multiple events that happens over and over again towards the end of the movie. He was getting really uncomfortable, and he kept talking more and more to his girlfriend, who she wasn't really talking back much. She's like, just, you know, leave me alone. But you could tell he was uncomfortable. He kept going, so I just look, because he's like, his girlfriend is in between the two of us, so I just give him a look, right? And he realizes that I'm upset. That doesn't stop him. He continues with the
brazen.
Then I go into the bathroom after, and I'm peeing, and I hear some guy going, so that's the movie, huh? And I look over my shoulder. It's fucking him. He wants to talk about the movie now in the bathroom.
To who? He said that to you?
To me. So wow. I go over, and I'm washing my hands now, and he's like, movie was something, huh? And I'm just silence, just fucking silence. I'm not going to talk to you. First of all, I hate it. I hate talking about movies right after they're over. It makes me uncomfortable.
So,
it makes me
think?
So cringy.
So, what'd you
I
think?
Fucking hate it. And this dude wanted to do it with me, and I already hate him. I already hate his me. I should have just given him one of those. Like, me. And then walked out. So anyways, that was my experience.
tough movie to have a conversation in, because it's very quiet at times.
Very, very quiet. That didn't stop mainly him. She was, for the most part, she was quiet. It was him, and you could tell he was uncomfortable. And I'm pretty sure I heard him say, do you want to leave, a few times, which I would have been delighted if they left.
Yeah,
I would have been very happy.
You should have went behind her and go, yes.
Yeah, I totally should have. Like, yeah, let's go. Yeah, I think we should leave. Let's go home and bang. I'll give you an old fashioned.
Go back to your place. My roommate's a bitch.
I feel like this movie was kind of just, and we'll move on, and we'll talk more about it in the spoiler, but it's one of these movies that some really, really quality, astute filmmaking was kind of wasted on either on me, because I'm too dumb, too slow-witted to get it, or it was just, it wasn't well-conceived, it was too half-baked to actually be formed. Did you see Lamb last year?
No, I did not see Lamb. I saw Antlers.
Okay, so this feels has a lot of similarities in tone and vibe to Lamb, which also was missed the mark for me. So, all right. Let's move on to a very different movie.
Let's talk about two men by the name of Chip and Dale, Rescue Rangers, a 2022 film directed by Akiva Schaffer, written by Doug Greger and Dan Mand. I normally don't mention the writers. Maybe that's a mistake on my part, but they deserve a little bit of credit here. This is a well-written movie starring the voices of John Mulaney, Andy Samberg, Kiki Lane in the flesh, and voices of Will Arnett, Eric Bana, Dennis Haysbert, Keegan-Michael Key, Seth Rogen, J.K. Simmons, and Chris Parnell in the flesh. 80% of Rotten Tomatoes. This is streaming on Disney+. Anderson, I did not know the Rotten Tomatoes score until today when I was doing my research. How on earth do 20% of critics give this a negative review?
I can see that.
You can, why? This is a really fun, really smart movie.
I think there's a little bit of fatigue going on. I know I got a taste of it with the multiverse, with the all-verse, with the Disney owns everything, so now we have rights to everything. And my only note in this entire movie, and I sat and watching it in my living room with my wife and my boy, the only thing that I wrote down was too much with a question mark. Because, like, there might just be too fucking much.
That's a great insight.
You know what I mean? It's just too everything much. All question at once. Mark. It's just...
Coming up next.
We get it, Disney. You own 90% of entertainment. And you can use whatever you want. I was shocked that we didn't see more Star Wars. I thought for sure that was coming. But just so much in this movie. There's so many callbacks, so many member berries. And that's a lot of fun the first few times you see it. And we're about 10 years in now to just like a member berry festival. That being said, this is a great kids movie to watch with your kid. And you're going to get something out of it as well. And there's layers to this movie. And it's one of the few kids movies that... was done with the parent in mind first, I think. I think that they definitely thought of us before they thought of the kids with a lot of the scenes and a lot of the writing. But for me, it was just, I was kind of exhausted by the time it was over.
Yeah, so, okay, a couple of things then. Number one, yes, I agree with you. A great movie to watch with your kids. You should pray that your kid like falls in love with this movie because there are many, many lesser movies that like, kids are. They want to watch the same thing over and over again, whatever. It's just how childhood is, I guess. And if this is one they fall in love with and they decide to watch over and over again, count your blessings because there are many, many worse movies than this. The licensing thing, I also noticed, I was expecting more Star Wars. That didn't happen. But I also was confused. Like, there were several properties that I was like doing the math in my head. I'm like, isn't this owned by Disney? Are they using like other properties like from Universal and things like that? They squeezed a few in there that I'd be interested to know how it came about. I don't know if Paramount's part of Disney now. Do you have any idea?
I don't believe so. They have their own streaming service.
That's what I thought.
Which Paramount property are you talking about?
They had at least one Beavis and Butthead reference to.
Oh, they got Transformers in there.
Yeah, they got Transformers, Universal property. They got a funny little bus ad says "Re-elect Senator Butthead." That was fun.
Yeah, Voltron's
in there. South Park's in there. Like,
I got to pause on Butthead to explain to Atticus who Butthead was. It was quite fun explaining Beavis and Butthead to my child who has no idea.
And why it would be funny if he was a senator.
He was. He comes down hard on bootlegs. That was his platform.
I see. Yes, and that is a big part of the movie. Should we bother explaining the plot?
Sure. I mean, it's a fine plot. It's actually a pretty good plot. It's a better plot than Men. I can tell you that.
All right, indeed. So Chip and Dale, of course, it takes the actual history of them, Rescue Rangers in the late 80s up to 1990, which I enjoyed as a young boy. That was my, sweet spot.
My wife loved it.
Oh yeah,
loved it's that a fun show. I missed it.
Lots of adventure.
I didn't see a single.
And it comes to pass in this movie, in the context of the film, that Chip and Dale went their separate ways. I think it was it Dale? Who? Oh yeah, 00 Dale. Yeah, Dale went off to try and be the next 007.
Solo act.
Didn't really work. And they went their separate ways. And then they reunite for one more adventure in this film. I enjoyed the... I at first was a little bumped, but I eventually came to enjoy the different animation styles.
Yeah, with the... it was clever, too, the way that they did that. He got reconstructive surgery. He got plastic surgery, essentially, to make him 3D. Mm-hmm. The newfangled... animation.
Yeah, because Chip is in a very 2D animation style from the cartoon series, and Dale looks like a Pixar character.
Yeah, Dale wants the Hollywood dream much more so, and that's all he had. And Chip was much more grounded, and he just wanted to live his life.
He wanted to work. He's like, you don't understand, man. Not hit shows don't always come around.
Similar storyline to Pop Star Never Stop, Never Stopping. As far as, you know, they had a hit thing going, and then Andy Samberg wanted to leave the band and become his own guy in Connor, right?
Connor for real.
Yeah, Connor for real. So, yeah, I mean, what else can we say about this
movie? I enjoyed the Seth Rogen angle, which is they allude to a style of animation that was prevalent for a few years, circa 2000, where a lot of characters think Beowulf. Characters have these sort of dead eyes, and they exist in the
mouths were off.
Yeah, they exist in the uncanny valley. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
I think a lot of people will get more out of this movie too that are a little younger than me, I guess, and more tuned into all the pop culture references, as Ugly Sonic. Like I think that's based on an actual thing, right? And yeah, it's something that happened.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there was an attempt at a Sonic movie that didn't go anywhere, but the Sonic they animated was horrific.
Yeah, he had the human teeth, I guess. And there were some very funny things to come out of that when they just couldn't stop focusing on his teeth. And
the unlicensed generic, the knockoff characters. I found it very clever.
Once again, this movie, I think, for me, suffers because of movies that came before, like, you know, the Lego movie. Like, if the Lego movie didn't exist, this movie would be like, oh my God. Like, I've never seen anything like it. But I've seen things like Free Guy to a lesser extent, you know? I've seen Wreck-It Ralph. I mean, there's these movies where it's just all-encompassing universe with all of these characters from my past, and it's just a giant memberberry orgy, which isn't always bad, especially if it's a kids movie, but I'm not going cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs over here, Brian.
I think you alluded to its appeal.
That was some memberberries.
That was good. I think you alluded to its appeal for me, which is, yeah, of course, there's natural comparisons to the Lego movie, and then, on and on, like you said, Free Guy, et cetera, et cetera. And with the exception of Wreck-It Ralph, this is me bringing my personal stuff into this, but like, I can't watch those with Tessa. You know what I mean? I can't watch those with your 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old kid. This is perfect for that age group. So,
You can't watch Lego movie with Tessa?
No, I can. I did. I think I was actually thinking of more of Free Guy. She loves the Lego movie, but I think she actually...
She can watch Wreck-It Ralph, I would think.
True, but I think she enjoyed
Sarah Silverman's character.
I think she enjoyed this more. She watched it twice in the first 2 days, and she seemed super into it and laughing at all the stupid jokes. And, you know, it was it hit the mark, for at least for this Film Vault family. I will agree with you, though, that is, to me, the poor man's Lego movie. Like, it doesn't land the knockout punch that the Lego movie does. This is still very good.
And I also, this suffers because I've been excited about this one, knowing that the Lonely Island were as involved as they were. And they didn't get writing credit, but I could tell that they had a lot of jokes in there that were... There's a lot of room for jokes, too, because there's so many jokes. They're so fast and furious.
Chip and Dale, they don't eat whale.
They don't eat whale. I was expecting some kind of banger to come, though, because Andy's such a good, you know... songster and songster. I mean, I wake up to I'm So Humble every single morning. That's my my alarm clock. Is I'm So Humble. It's Kana, and he just sings about how humble he is for the first 5 minutes of every morning that I have from Pop Star Never Stopping. So I was very excited about their take on Chip and Dale, which I had no vested interest in because I missed it as a child. It's a little bit after my time. And I don't want to say I was disappointed, but I guess I was disappointed. I mean, not disappointed. It was good. It's good. It just didn't blow my socks off. My socks might have been a little looser by the time it was over. Also, you should count your lucky stars that you have a child who is young who likes to watch movies. My boy is still stuck on horrific, awful, terrible things that I can't be in the same room for. If you have any curiosity as to what I'm subjected to and what his first go-to is, it's on Netflix, and it's called The Rise of Dino Master, and it's an actual... Do you know what it is?
I'm vaguely aware of it. Tessa watches Camp Jurassic.
It's
actually really, whatever it's called,
really good, like high budget, high production value version of what he was watching. He's been watching for the last 2 years, which is like T-Rex Ranch or something. And it's just some dad who bought some computer software that allows him to superimpose like dinosaurs over like horrible video that he shoots with his son.
Sounds great.
Running around in Texas. And it's just awful, Brian. It's really, really bad. And it's so popular on YouTube that Netflix actually bought it, and they have their own version of it now that Atticus is watching. And that's all he wants to watch. And, like, you know, he enjoyed Chip and Dale here and there, but he has no interest in ever watching it again. So consider yourself fair. I would love it if you wanted to watch movies over and over again, and I could be in the room doing work while he watches a full-length movie. And no, he wants to watch Hello Neighbor video, somebody trying to figure out how to do Hello Neighbor on YouTube, or he watches these horrific. You know what I am starting to watch with him though, just today, and this is a little tip for anyone who has Apple TV, is the prehistoric Attenborough show, which is done Planet Earth with dinosaurs.
Christy and I literally have plans to make Tessa watch that.
We watched the first 20 minutes, and I got to tell you, it's pretty good looking. Pretty, pretty good looking. All right. I have one more movie, as do you. Let's get to it.
All right, you assigned me a film called The Killing. The Killing, a 1956 film.
Nice.
Written and directed by a young Stanley Kubrick, starring Sterling Hayden, Colleen Gray, and Vince Edwards. This sits at a fresh 98% of Rotten Tomatoes. You can rent this, or if you want to come over to my house and borrow my DVD set of Kubrick films, you can do that. Probably easier to rent it, honestly. Sterling Hayden, a dead ringer for a young Liam Neeson.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Okay, so The Killing, I think it came up because there's only a couple Kubrick films I have not seen, this being one of them, and now I can cross it off my list. This was heavily referenced as an influence to Pulp Fiction, to Reservoir Dogs, and you can Pulp see Fiction. You can see why. There's the main character is similar to Mr. Blonde. He's a guy just out of prison. He's looking for a big score. They got the scene with they're plotting the whole thing, sitting around a table, much like the Reservoir Dogs. There's anonymity amongst thieves. Sterling Hayden is the mastermind. He won't give up anyone else's identity to the others. And then there is very, very general, and say at the end there's a very, very similar ending.
Yes. But the story structure, and we go back and forth on this, Ian, and I've read him cite this as the story structure, the editing structure that he uses a model for Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, the story is told through multiple points of view, sometimes a little bit out of order. I found it a little confusing, but
I would imagine you did.
I was able to get on board. You got
your chart out, and you had like the little red string connecting scenes for you, helping you out.
It's a black and white movie, in some ways a very old time movie, but also you can see just the young Kubrick in there. Like the lighting is meticulous. It's honestly, in its own way, gorgeous. It's perfectly, perfectly lit with the dark and the light and the contrast. It really was something to behold. You can see, you know, there's a lot of Hitchcock in here, a lot of what would go on to become the Coen brothers. And you can't talk about this without mentioning some of Steven Soderbergh's movies. Like this has crossover with The Ocean's, at least Ocean's 11, and also Logan Lucky. It's got some elements there. Of course, this came many, many, many years before. There's a sharpshooter, Anderson. I don't know if you remember, he has a convertible, and he's quite the character. Mm-hmm. He's quite the fun, enjoyable.
He always that's the thing with Kubrick, is as proficient as he was with style and with execution, with the camera, and with all of his tools. His tool bag was like, you know, he could use it like no other. He always saw the levity in his characters, and that's what really draws me to Kubrick, for the same reason that I love that show Patriot. It just looks so good, yet it's hilarious. And I mean, the wrestling scene with the guy just beating the shit out of those guys, like that's just kind of out of left field. It didn't really fit the rest of the movie, but it works.
A wrestler in real life. Did you know that?
Yeah, of course.
He was great. It's populated with colorful characters. I enjoyed almost all of them.
It goes down smooth, right?
It does.
It goes down smooth.
In some ways, it's a very old-time movie, but in some ways, it's got a very, very modern feel, like the out-of-sequence storytelling at certain times and the different perspectives and the colorful characters feels like a lot of Tarantino's better work. I did have a little chuckle because you could tell that the casting maybe didn't match the script, because at one point Sterling Hayden's girlfriend says something like, "I'm not very pretty, I'm not very smart, don't leave me, I can't make it on my own," and it's like, she is objectively very pretty, she's a very pretty actress. So I had to get a little chuckle over that. Overall, really enjoyable movie. I'm glad I could cross off the last Hitchcock movie, or the last Kubrick movie I had to see.
Finally, Brian, it's not the last movie. I mean, you have not seen Eyes Wide Shut. Your eyes have been shut for that movie.
My eyes have been shut to that film.
You've never seen Killer's Kiss, which you don't have to. You've never seen Fear and Desire, which you don't have to. There's probably, you probably haven't seen Barry Lyndon.
I don't choose to.
Yeah, he's made 13 movies, Brian, and I bet you've seen 5 of them, maybe 6.
That's really hurtful. I've seen the majority.
It's not hurtful. It's just fact.
I bet I've seen them. If you go by runtime, I've certainly seen the majority.
Brian, Rob Jabaz.
He's made 26 hours worth of movies. I've seen at least 14 hours.
Very good, Brian. It's a travesty that you co-host a film podcast, a very popular film podcast, and you've not seen Kubrick's entire collection.
Rock's popular.
All right, I'm moving on to a very highly anticipated amongst horror enthusiasts anyways, film called The Sadness. The Sadness, made by Canadian filmmaker Rob Jabaz. This is his directorial
debut.
Happy
Victoria Day.
Rob Jabaz. Happy Victoria Day, Rob Jabaz. He made this film in Taiwan, so it's technically a Taiwanese film. And it opens up with a couple in bed. This movie, you know, from my horror friends out there, they were counting the days that this one came out. People were very excited about the new take on the zombie. It's a new rules, a new type of zombie, and people always liked that. Remember when people were losing their shit because of the aforementioned 28 Days Later?
Yeah, we had a good run there of inventive zombie films.
Speaking of run, yeah, like they were running and people just couldn't believe it. They're like, these zombies are fast. All the zombies before were slow, but these ones are
fast.
These are fast
zombies.
All right. So this one.
Sorry, give me the title. Give me the title.
The Sadness, which doesn't quite translate appropriately, I don't think. It opens up with a young, attractive couple in bed. And, you know, they're kind of cuddling and whatnot. I was expecting to get their bang on because I knew the premise of the movie. That did not happen. But there's some background news stories and whatnot, and we're hearing about this new virus, the Alvin virus, which is quickly spreading and mutating, and it's a mystery virus. No one's really sure what it does, but they know that it's not good, and everyone wants to avoid it. No one does. Most everyone gets this Alvin virus by the time the movie's over, as you'd imagine, because it's like what happens with zombies in every zombie movie is everyone gets it.
It's fast spreader.
Here's the thing. Do you have any idea about this movie this virus? What kind of zombies? So the original zombies, the George A. Romero zombies, right? To Night of the Living Dead. They wanted to eat brains, and they were like walking
the classic
corpses,
zombie
tropes. Right?
Yeah, lurching.
Frankenstein almost lurching. Yeah, yeah. And then we got the Danny Boyle zombies over there that are running. That was insane. These zombies,
written by Alice Garland.
Yes,
I should point that out.
Suggested that we had already talked. Thank you. These zombies, they become sadists, sexually deprived sadists who want to rape and inflict pain while getting their sexual jollies. That's what these zombies do.
Fun.
I don't know, fun, but I mean it's fun. You can feel it pushing the envelope. You can feel it almost saying, like, can you believe we're going here? Can you believe we're doing this? But it didn't, all that said, it didn't quite go as far as I was expecting it to, because it was kind of like gloves were off and they were bare knuckle fighting with the his script and the kinds of things that you were seeing. Here's a line of comedy that happens in the movie. One of the characters loses his fingers, and an older, sexually frustrated man who is already before being zombified, trying to make casual conversation with a young girl on a train, and she thwarts his. I mean, I can't even say that he was coming on to her, but you know, he was being a bit inappropriate,
and she rebuffed
being
him.
Lechy. Yes, yes. He was kind of playing the part of the older guy who's trying to talk to a young woman just because he probably wants to go home and fantasize about it later type thing, right? This guy, once he becomes zombified, sexualized, he's talking to another character who's lost his fingers, and he says, "Don't worry about you losing your fingers. I can finger your bitch for you." Oh. Like that kind of humor, that kind of thing. We see a lot of really intense violence and body harm in this movie. We see bloody orgies occurring.
Is this in English or is this in Taiwanese?
Taiwanese. It takes place in Taipei.
For these reasons, I'm out.
And there's an homage to the irreversible fire extinguisher scene.
Oh, fun.
At one point. However, it's kind of sums up the movie for me, because the fire extinguisher scene in this movie, 2022, has nothing on the irreversible fire extinguisher scene, which was 2001, I think. So we're 21 years later, and they were paying homage to it. And when you pay homage to something 20 years later, I feel like you should outdo it, right? And
don't just redo it.
Missed the mark by a mile. It wasn't even redoing it. It was like, we're going to do our version of it, and it's not going to be nearly
as...
And
it wasn't good.
Horrifying. It wasn't bad, but I mean, but it had nothing on irreversible. Sorry, I'm a little bit nasally more so than normal because of my sickness, Brian.
That's my thing.
This was an ordeal. This movie was not made for me. I think if you really, really like movies that push the envelope with horror, and you know, a couple times I thought that they were going to go there, but they didn't quite get to a Serbian film level, even though they were kind of toying with the idea, because there is a scene that takes place in a nursery and something horrific does happen to a child, a newborn. But I was worried, and I was actually quite pleased to see that they didn't take it in that direction. But there's stuff in this movie that I'll never forget, and I kind of wish wasn't in my brain. Like at one point, the hero saves this poor guy that's being, he's being tormented by these three like middle school kids, like probably 12, 13 year olds who have been zombified, and they're just beating the fuck out of this guy. He's just bloody. His face is just like all like giant eggs all over. You know those, like when you got like just giant bumps all over your face from being beaten. His eyes are swollen shut.
Hematomas.
His eyes are swollen shut, and so apparently the story is that the zombies don't go after their own. They just go after people who have not been infected yet, because they want to rape and they want to cause harm and they want to cause fear. And it's no good if the other person's into it. See? So they don't do it to themselves, even though there are some breakdowns in the like plot holes, I guess we'll call them. I already talked about the bloody orgy that was taking place. So there's some skull fucking in this movie.
Oh, fun.
As well. Shudder. I watched this on Shudder. This would have been fun to watch with the audience, I think, just because of the reactions that would have gotten out of both of us. I don't know how you react to a horror film, so it'll be fun watching The Green Inferno with you, because I've never actually experienced that with you. So
yeah, I don't watch many horror films, so I'll be interested to find out how I react too.
So these like 4 or 5 13-year-olds are on like this outdoor basketball court, and they're just beating the fuck out of this guy. It's like Reginald Denny type stuff from the 92 riots, right? And at one point, and so our hero is watching this from afar, and he's like, I got to do something. So he's about to go, you know, save this guy or do what he can. He has a weapon himself. And it's at this point that he decides to intervene when these 13-year-olds take some barbed wire. One of them says, "I got a great idea." And they take barbed wire and they wrap it around this pole. And then they all grab their victim and they spread his legs and they go across the court. And now they start running full speed with his legs akimbo. And they're planning on smashing him against this barbed wire wrapped pole, right?
His groin. I'm going to be honest, that sounds painful.
It does. So our hero stops these little hooligans and they run off. And he says, "You get out of here, you whippersnapper. Stop trying to rape this innocent guy." And this might be the most, for me, the most... disturbing part of the whole movie was the guy looks up at the hero the guy that he saved, looks up with his face all swollen shut, and he says, "Why'd you do that, man? I was just about to bust my nut." And something along those lines. And it's like, ugh. So like, he was in so on like, it, and he's like, already been zombified.
Did you like this movie?
I mean, I can see how people would.
That's not a yes.
People who like this type of movie. For me. I spoke with Florence earlier because I wanted to get Florence's take on practical effects, which we'll be doing later in the week, top five practical effects. And I knew I had to get Florence's take as our resident horror queen. I was talking to her a little bit about the sadness. And she says that she doesn't think that she would need to see this movie. And I said, yeah, if you're into that kind of like just over the top grotesque, I would recommend the final sequence before this one, because there's a lot of very, very similar, like filthy, horrible. I can't believe a human being would actually dream this up.
Wait,
and
you
then
mean
shoot
the
it
human centipede final sequence?
Yeah, the final sequence. But that's all done for like really, really like dark laughs. And this one, it definitely is not all done for laughs. Like there's a lot of like, you know, intense scenes for the sake of thrill, which is just like, for me, it's an ordeal. So an interesting movie. If you hear my words, I'm not saying that it's a bad movie. However, Bri, with these, and I don't know if you realize this, but I'm trying to like, to acquire a film taste that I don't have late in life, which is hard to do. Like, you know, it's hard to find food that you didn't like, but now you're gonna like it, right? Like, it's very hard to do late in life.
Bro,
you know what
you're telling
like.
Me I'm trying to enjoy good movies for the first time in my life.
You really are, like, and you got to do so this week with The Killing, which I'm very happy.
I know,
for
it was a strange feeling,
but I'm trying to do it with horror films and I just can't get over the hump. Maybe there's still time for me, I don't know, but like this movie, and it's got like a high Rotten Tomatoes score and the audiences are loving it. But for me, like the first like 45 minutes of this movie, there are so many motivations that I just did not buy from the characters. Some of the blocking is just off and weak. I mean, these movies for the most part just aren't well-made movies. And every now and again, I'll see a horror film, and like Men was a well-executed movie. It had its own problems. But for the most part, with these slasher movies, they're missing so much quality in the other parts. You know, for me. I just did it for me.
There you go.
For me. So anyways, that's that. I dabbled, stuck my toe in. I actually submerged my entire body in the sadness, and I was glad to
swim or for a dip.
I was very, very happy to get out of that pool. I can tell you that. Not for me.
Fair enough.
Not for me.
All right, guys, tune in later in the week. We'll have top five. Wait, what's our top five? Oh, top five practical effects. A fun one to research.
It was. It was a lot of fun.
I learned a lot.
It was, speaking of member berries, I mean, I diving in and dipping my toe, I just spent all week long in early to mid 80s glory and horror from my childhood. And it was cathartic, Brian. I worked out a lot of my demons by revisiting these things and seeing how they were done.
Really?
Nightmares, Brian. Nightmares were caused deep in my brain, thanks to my dad taking me to many of the movies on my
That's
list.
That's funny you mention that, because mine are a mix of like modern films where they use practical effects where they could have easily used CGI, and it was honestly breathtaking. And then there's a few in there. It was like these movies terrified me as a kid.
I didn't think you had any horror in there.
No, I was a bit of a pab. I don't know if you know this.
No, yeah, yeah. No, why are you saying past tense?
Yeah, so I was a bit more of a bab.
Ah, okay. So you didn't see horror films growing up, so you couldn't put them on your list because they weren't on your menu.
100% true.
Hmm. I would imagine that a lot of the movies on my list that will be on your will have seen. But yeah, I'm excited to talk about them. I also talked to a real-life practical effects wizard.
Really?
And somebody I met by happenstance a few months ago, and I made it a point to set up a phone call with him just earlier today. I actually got to get his take on the whole thing, and I'll be weighing in with some of his thoughts as well.
Look at you, man, going the extra mile with your research.
I like to give legitimacy to this program, Brian.
The feature artist this week is Glowbox. Check them out, AndersonBrian.com, Glowbox. AndersonBrian.com is the website where you can find the Amazon banner that sits atop for your shopping convenience. We'll go over the interesting and notable purchases next episode. Anderson and Brian is the Instagram, The Film Vault on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you to all of our Patreon listeners. We appreciate you. Look for the spoiler talk edition of Men in your inbox probably now. Also,
we're about to do that right indeed. Now. I'm excited to do that with you, Brian.
I'm less excited, but I'm willing to do it.
Why are you less excited to talk about Men?
It didn't inspire. But I'm mostly joking. I will happily talk about Men. There's lots to talk about. Thank you to Giovanni, Jordan Wolf, Mitch Burns. Hey, guys, happy Victoria Day. And, of course, Mike Cole.
Happy Victoria Day.
Mike Cole for always keeping us honest.
Oh, Mike Cole ratting me out, too. He was one of the first guys to be like, excuse me, Anderson. Brian, you'll be happy to know that you are correct in this. Fried green tomatoes did, in fact, involve that. My fucking wife had to chime in. I'm like, can you believe this, honey? I'm getting hammered. And she goes, well, yeah. I mean, that's one of the main parts of the whole movie. How do you not remember
that? You fucked up.
Jesus Christ. It was a tough week, Brian.
What was that movie, The Hunt? You fucked up.
I love The Hunt. The Hunt was good.
They don't sell this in Tennessee. You fucked up.
There's two movies called The Hunt that came out in the last 10 years or so, and I love both of them. All right. Let's get out of here.
Do not check out Avery's podcast, Invade the Decade. Until next time.
It's very good. Invade the Decade. Very, very good. Till next time. We do it for Van Gogh.